who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL Podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft.
That's right. We will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and surprises.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year.
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Not for a moment do I want to rain on the Inflation Reduction Act parade, nor its passage despite three Republicans killing the cap on insulin prices and despite the late treachery from Princess Cinema, saving Wall Street $14 billion, $25 billion, more. But a reminder that all this will be erased if the fascists take the House and the Senate, and especially if El Duce wins in 2021, because if you missed it, because you spent the weekend in the real world of a Biden and democracy win in Washington, Trump revealed the CPAC coven in Dallas, he boasted that he is planning on a virtual military dictatorship for America, complete with the obligatory concentration camps. Every day, we get a little closer to that torture chamber world of CPAC and a Trump return, and we remain standing alongside that anonymous former Republican congressman that Mark Leibovich quoted as saying, "Look, we have no plan for this except sitting around hoping he dies." Eight words, and eight words only, were spoken truthfully and honestly at the fascist rally in Texas over the weekend. Are you ready to hear them? Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are all domestic terrorists.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are all domestic terrorists. The disembodied voice of the convention announcer, nominally she was introducing a panel by that name at 3:10 Saturday afternoon, prevailing local racist time, on the main stage of the Trinity Ballroom, in which a panel, including founding CPAC grifter Mercedes Schlepp, insisted that anybody protesting, quote, woke gender identity and history classes controlled by unaccountable and unpatriotic unions would be branded a domestic terrorist by Attorney General Merrick Garland. Wait, somebody branded a domestic terrorist by Attorney General Merrick Garland? I wish! It is easy to turn away from things like CPAC because after you have seen one three-headed cow, how many more do you need to look at? The problem arises when you realize they are all three-headed cows, and their plan is to make being a three-headed cow mandatory under the laws of the United States of America, along with Trump's insistence that he will purge government of anybody he did not appoint, and his repetition and clarification of his earlier announcements about the concentration camps and the enforcement by armed troops of political decisions, which, you know, between them, kind of define a military dictatorship. He intends to take over the National Guard and utilize it as his own army, period. From his slurred speech Saturday about the National Guard, quoting, "We're sending them in because we're not going to let Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Portland, it's so dangerous, those streets. Los Angeles is so bad, San Francisco." And if troops beholden to him, overruling laws established by Democratic states, Democratic legislatures, Democratic governors, Democratic mayors, by democracies, if they were not warning enough, their first target? Let me quote this diseased mind yet again. "The only way you're going to remove the homeless encampments and reclaim our downtowns is to open up large parcels, large tracts of relatively inexpensive land on the outer skirts of the various cities and bring in medical professionals, psychiatrists, psychologists, and drug rehab specialists and create tent cities." You know, like the tent cities on the southern border, only this time for the homeless and anybody else the Trumptorian guard sweeps up. Protesters, Democratic politicians, critics, tent cities, forced psychological and drug treatment. Madness? Impossibilities? I wrote a piece 6 years ago about the obvious next step to Trump's xenophobic attack on immigrants, documented or otherwise, that nobody in this country was addressing at that point. The ones in the country are going to round them up. The ones trying to get in the country are going to round them up. Where are you going to keep them? You're going to have to build large areas in which large numbers of people can be kept, even if it's just keeping them there until you can expel them. Camps with concentrated populations. What would you call those kinds of camps with concentrated populations? Concentration camps? I had editors at major news websites tell me that the logic might be right, but we would never see such places because this was America and this was just Trump's over-the-top campaign rhetoric. The BBC finally published that piece, and Trump finally built his immigration concentration camps. Tell me, what would stop him next time? At the Dallas CPAC, there was a guy in an orange jumpsuit on a stage made up to look like a jail cell. He was portraying a victim of the political persecution, the concentration camps, that Trump's band of authoritarians believe exists. He was, in his mind, a political prisoner, one of those many peaceful January 6th protesters, being held in a gulag in D.C. merely because he questioned the blah, 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 and it's not like he killed anybody, and they didn't stop the Electoral College count, and they didn't actually overthrow democracy. And look at him, he's crying. And there goes cavewoman Marjorie Taylor Greene to kneel in front of him and comfort him. This is how self-unaware the people who support Trump actually are. You know, no, it's not even self-unawareness, is it? They don't care about details like awareness or hypocrisy or contradiction or logic or truth. The guy in the orange jumpsuit was actually at the January 6th coup attempt. His name was Brandon Straka, and he avoided jail time because he flipped on the other members of the mob. And the Trumpists didn't care about that. If they can mold bullcrap into the shape of whatever they need to believe at the moment, they will do so and applaud, and then they will eat the bullcrap. Logic, contradiction, hypocrisy, reality, no longer a problem here. Rick Scott, senator from Florida, the state where the governor dictator boasted of removing math textbooks because they had too much critical race theory in them. In math, Rick Scott got up and called Big Tech, Anthony Fauci, and Neil Young, quote, the modern-day equivalent of book burners. Ted Cruz insisted, "My pronouns are kiss my ass." If only he understood. That means we should call him kiss my ass, which I can work with. Andy Biggs, the Arizona congressman, the crazy one, as opposed to the other crazy one and the other crazy one and the other crazy one. He insisted he will defund the FBI and the Department of Justice, and I'm sure it's just a coincidence that he is being investigated for his role in the coup by the FBI and the Department of Justice. And in the grossest of the gross, Trump pointed out the former White House physician, now crazed right-wing extremist congressman, Ronnie Jackson. And as Jackson rose to his feet to greet Trump, Trump said of Jackson, quote, "He loved looking at my body. It was so strong." Now, there are two reactions to have here. One, an overlooked way to counterpunch Trump and this entire miasma of the emperor has no clothes is to not indulge his small lies, nor be delicate about them. Say Trump's body is not only not strong, it is grotesquely weak. Say he is a fat old man who can barely walk down a 3-degree gradient. And say he hides his enormous paunch with cleverly retrofitted tent suits. The second reaction is, I'm probably burying the lead on the Ronnie Jackson part of the story, which is that Ronnie Jackson surprised one and all at CPAC by being able to stand up.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are all domestic terrorists.
It would be comforting if we could think all the Republican and fascist domestic terrorists were at that convention that unfolded like a Stephen King novel. But the immediate danger from them played out in the background of the justifiable celebration of the Inflation Reduction Act. I just worry that we forget that these people have declared war on American democracy, and to them each day is another battle, separate and distinct. And while we take a deep breath, they resumed planning to give Trump control of the National Guard and to let him purge the civil service like this were turkey. And, oh, by the way, they also still have votes on the Senate floor right now. In 1996, a vial filled with 1,000 international units of insulin, a month's worth, cost $21. Today, it's $300. The world is not running out of insulin. There's no supply chain issue. Big Pharma is not having a financial meltdown. This is all about greed. Recent polling suggests half of all diabetics have cut back on food to pay for insulin. 62% have skipped or rationed doses to pay for insulin. 63% have sold personal belongings to pay for insulin. 75% have gone into debt to pay for insulin. It is such a deliberate, soulless torture that even 7 Republican senators went along with that part of the Inflation Reduction Act that would have capped the price of that 1,000 IU vial at $35, and 43 Republican senators did not. And their votes should be hung around their necks every time they run again for office. And they not only include people sometimes seen as reasonable, like that great flaming fraud Mitt Romney, and they not only include this stupid, senile, old, yokel fascist Chuck Grassley, who, as he voted no on insulin, tweeted he had once voted yes on insulin, but included in these 43, 3 of the 43 who will tell you they are pro-life. We're pro-life. Richard Burr and Rob Portman and Pat Toomey. And they could have been the last 3 Republican votes that were needed to relieve diabetics from the choice of insulin or food, because the 3 of them are leaving the Senate in January, and they could vote their conscience if they had one, if they weren't corporate whores, if anyone or anything mattered besides their desperate, endless, insatiable desire for money. And the leader of their party, whom none of them will call out, whom none of them will fight, whom none of them has integrity or courage enough to oppose as they retire, he is in front of a crowd of wildly cheering fascists and racists and white supremacists and authoritarians and many of them actual Nazis. And he is outlining taking over the National Guard and sending it to Chicago and San Francisco to do his will. And a lot of us didn't notice because we think a Senate vote that they will happily and immediately erase if they regain power is a turning point. This nation has always opposed and fought and destroyed fascists and racists and white supremacists and authoritarians in Germany, in Japan, in Georgia. And we have to oppose and fight and destroy them today and every day, even if they live in Phoenix or Rome, Georgia, or Mar-a-Lago. They threaten freedom on this planet. We defend freedom on this planet. That's our job. That's what we do, especially when, as the cliche goes, they literally tell us who they are.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are all domestic terrorists.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL Podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
It's draft season. The 2024 NFL Draft is coming up, and the Move the Sticks podcast has you covered for all your draft needs. Do you want to watch the game like a fan or have the mind of a scout? The show's hosted by me, Daniel Jeremiah, and my partner, Bucky Brooks. The two of us bring knowledge from careers as NFL talent scouts to the podcast world so fans can watch and understand the nuances of the game like never before.
If you want to learn everything about this year's prospects ahead of the draft and learn what makes them stand out, there's no better podcast than Move the Sticks. Who are the top five draft prospects at each position? Which quarterbacks are going in the first round? Who are the top 50 prospects in the draft? Who should you put in your mock draft? We have all the answers for you.
We've been studying these prospects all season, so you won't get a better opinion. We'll have several new episodes dropping each week, and you don't want to miss a single one. Subscribe now and listen to the Move the Sticks podcast on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wow, the Chiefs did it. They went back to back.
The end of another season, and now for some time away from the studio.
Oh, Mark, we're not done. Now the fun starts. It's the offseason.
The combine.
Guys running really fast. You bet we're covering
it. Free agency.
Old faces and new places. Of course we'll talk about
it. Got the draft.
The next generation of stars. It's a must.
I'll just set up a sleeping bag in the studio.
That's right. There's no better way to stay up to date on the latest from our league than listening to Around the NFL. We'll break down all the moves in free agency and make sure you're ready for the start of next season.
I'll be here, so you should listen to every word we say about everything we see.
That's right, Mark.
Listen to the Around the NFL podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Heed the call.
Still ahead on Countdown, a major Indiana corporation recoils at the new theocratic abortion law there, but a much more high-profile one has done nothing, even though it is vulnerable to your phone call. In sports, Pete Rose is back, and that means it's 1, 2, 3 controversies come out at the old ball game. And worse persons, we all know what the fascists mean when they invoke George Soros. So which United States senator has just invoked George Soros? That's next. This is Countdown. When your state legislature makes bad pharma guys look good, you have royally screwed up. The Indiana story coming up. First, in each edition of Countdown, we feature a dog in need whom you can help. Every dog has its day. First, from last week, some good news. Dory, the bare-faced dog on death row at the New York Pound, she has been rescued. This time it is a dog named Spot. No, this is not a lack of creativity. Spot lives up to his name. He has striking black circles around both eyes. He's 4 months old, an American Staffy mix. He's 24 pounds. He was hit by a car. He's recuperating well at the shelter in Tampa, the Hillsborough County facility, and he's up for fostering or adoption anywhere in that area, Tampa, St. Pete, wherever. You can see pictures of Spot, whose number, if you want to write this down, is A223-6320. Find full details at my account for Dogs in Need, Tom Jumbo Grumbo on Twitter. That's Spot in Tampa at Tom Jumbo Grumbo on Twitter. Thank you. Time for postscripts to the news. Some headlines, some thoughts, some snark. Dateline Indianapolis, the only good news behind Indiana's passage of another draconian anti-abortion law, and doing so in the dead of night Friday, is that several of the state's highest profile businesses have already revolted without any prompting or boycotts. Eli Lilly, and let's not forget, they are one of the handful of pharmaceutical companies bankrupting and killing diabetics in this country by charging them 10 times what insulin costs. They have shown a minor sign of being human beings. They say they will shift new jobs out of Indiana as a result of this bill. Roche Diagnostics, Kroger, Cummins Airplanes Engines, they have all criticized the new laws and or promised to help Indiana employees who need abortion or reproductive care. And that's how you beat the fascists. You turn their modern slave states into business deserts. It is the only thing they understand. Indiana receives about $11 billion more out of the federal government each year than the state puts in. The state economy has no margin for error, yet their religious nut theocracy state houses just made one. Another solution, of course, if you read a story or heard a newscast anywhere referring to Indiana's vote as pro-life or a victory for pro-life forces, phone that newsroom. Emails are easy to ignore. Phone calls are not, and switchboards are listed. Call the newsroom and politely dress somebody down over the use of the term pro-life. Trust me, word moves up and down a newsroom food chain fast. There's a second area in which you might actually be able to do something about Indiana. One of the largest and most geographically broad businesses headquartered in that state has said nothing and done nothing yet. They are extraordinarily vulnerable to pressure, though. The National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA, headquarters, Indianapolis. You don't even have to try to make your feeling known to them, and you do not have to be in an Indiana or Indiana itself, a state where abortion rights are under immediate attack. Did you go to college? Did they have sports there? If not, do you just have a favorite college sports team? Call the athletic department. Ask them why they are associated with the NCAA when the NCAA is turning a blind eye to the misogynistic pro-death Taliban of Indiana. Again, phone calls. Your email can be deleted or forwarded to somebody else in half a second. Your phone call delays somebody from going home. 20 phone calls will keep them from going home for half an hour. The NCAA makes money off college athletes in every remaining free state. If they want to keep getting that money, they have to move out of Indiana. Make them. Make the call. The next battleground on this will probably be Ohio. The New Yorker's Jane Mayer interviewed an Ohio State rep named Gary Click, Pastor Gary Click of the First Church of the Gooey Death. I'm sorry, I couldn't read my notes. The Fremont Baptist Temple in Sandusky, Ohio. Click, who is the graduate of one of these unaccredited Bible colleges. It says here, Midwestern Bullcrap School? Something. I can't read my notes. I'm sorry. He plans a personhood act in Ohio, which would outlaw not just nearly all abortions, but also most in vitro techniques and a lot of contraception. Abortion to save the mother's life would be legal. Incest, rape, tough. Worst of all, Representative Click still doesn't believe that story of the 10-year-old rape victim in his state, even though a 27-year-old Ohio fiend has already confessed to raping the child. Click called the story, quote, suspicious, and said it fit too neatly. Jane Mayer adds one last zinger. Guess who this Click idiot is a close political ally of? Of course, Congressman Jim, I didn't see these kids get raped. Jordan. One overall bit of good news that may have passed under your radar, the newest Monmouth poll released last week on who is favored in the generic congressional ballot is now Democrats leading 50-43. 50-43. Perhaps more important, 74% of Democrats in this poll say it's very important for them to vote, and that is 5 points ahead of Republicans saying the same thing.
This is SportsCenter. Wait, check that. Not anymore. This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
And from the world of wide sports for the 33rd consecutive year, Pete Rose is the gift of controversy that keeps on controversying. Pete Rose managed to produce a big picture controversy, a smaller picture controversy, and a misogyny controversy all in one afternoon. The Philadelphia Phillies celebrated their first world championship team from the year 1980, and sure enough, invited onto a Major League Baseball field for the first time since he was banned for life in 1989, a Major League Baseball field in Philadelphia anyway, was the 1980 Phils World Championship first baseman, Peter Edward Rose. Five years ago, the Philadelphia Phillies had canceled a ceremony in which they were going to put Pete Rose on their Wall of Fame, and he lost his Fox Sports Baseball pregame show job when court documents revealed sworn testimony from a now adult woman that he had had sex with her when she was 14, and his defense was he thought she was 16. The team must have figured that in the intervening years, things had cooled off not so much. At the event for the 1980 team, Rose was asked about his presence at the Phillies event by reporter Alex Coffey of the Philadelphia Inquirer. What would he say, she asked him, to people who said his presence sends a negative message to women? His reply to her, quote, "No, I'm not here to talk about that. Sorry about that. It was 55 years ago, babe." Later, an Associated Press reporter asked a similar question of Rose, and Rose's reply, quote, "I'm going to tell you one more time, I'm here for the Philly fans, I'm here for my teammates, I'm here for the Phillies organization, and who cares what happened 50 years ago? You weren't even born, so you shouldn't be talking about it because you weren't born. If you don't know a damn thing about it, don't talk about it," end quote. So, Pete, you're saying the reporter simply isn't old enough? They then brought Pete Rose back to the Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Alex Coffey. She now reports, quote, "Rose was made available after the ceremony. Someone, maybe an agent, said he had something to say to me, but he didn't seem to know he was expected to say anything. He asked if he'd offended me and said, quote, 'Will you forgive me if I sign 1,000 baseballs for you?' end quote, before saying, quote, 'Sorry.'" Like 1,000 signed Pete Rose baseballs is a lot. He has signed like 10,000 baseballs a day every day since 1989. Look, there's a bigger controversy even than this. Pete Rose has been banned for life from baseball for gambling on games in which he was the manager. He's been banned since 1989. What does that mean? As late as 1999, he was not permitted even to go into a Major League Baseball stadium. Even when the suspension was relaxed so they could bring him onto the field at the World Series for a credit card company promotional event, and of course there was a controversy then, too, when a reporter asked him about the gambling, active players were warned that just talking to Pete Rose on a major league field or a minor league field might result in them getting fined or suspended. So what does Major League Baseball expect when it brings Pete Rose back out onto a field because a sponsor or a team can make a little extra money because he's there? Either he is suspended for life or he's not. Don't try to have it both ways. You suspend him and he suffers for it. And in a limited way, you have to live with the reality that you suspend him and you suffer for it. You can't bring him to the Phillies celebration of the 1980 World Series win. Sorry. But Commissioner Rob Manfred now runs the game out of the terrible, suffocating fear that somewhere, someplace, somebody has a dollar left that they have not spent on baseball. And so Pete Rose is suspended for life and can't have anything to do with baseball except for events like the Phillies celebration. All right, big news in golf. Let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina. And here is our Countdown golf correspondent, Bob Slurm.
Thank you, Keith. Thomas the Tank Engine comes to life as Joo-Young Tom Kim, of course named for the poet Dylan Thomas the Tank Engine, 961 to win this tourney by 5 strokes. He's 20 years old, second youngest to win on the PGA Tour since, oh, what a shot that was, since the Spanish Inquisition of 1437. He earns a PGA Tour card for next year, 6 birdies. He had an eagle, an ostrich, 3 albatrosses, and an ibex. What a golfer. What a nickname. What a first half of the last round. What a last half of the first round. This is Bob Slurm. Back now to the golf movie Dead Solid Perfect with Randy Quaid and Keith Olbermann. Already in progress. Randy?
Thanks, Bob. Great report. Good God, it's already football season. They played the Hall of Fame exhibition game. And remember, the NFL hates it when you call them exhibition games. Jaguars fell to the Oakland-Los Angeles-Oakland-Las Vegas Raiders 27-11. The first preseason game, slightly less meaningless than usual because Raiders coach Josh McDaniels grew up in the shadow of the Hall of Fame, and thus the game in Canton, Ohio, and his team got the win. And back to baseball for 2 last notes. For 6 innings only, the Pittsburgh Pirates had the greatest 1-2 punch among catchers for all time in terms of names. In addition to catcher Jason DeLay, they had obtained catcher Jose Godoy, best known as Jose Waiting for Godoy. And yesterday, Jose Godoy played and then left the Pirates game with an injury in the 6th inning, meaning the Pirates are now actually waiting for Godoy. Godoy and DeLay are almost as good a name combo as baseball's unbeatable pair of teammates from the White Sox. On May 5th and May 8th, 1909, Chicago pitcher Frank Owen was throwing to his catcher, Frank Owens. And lastly, this news, Yoenis Cespedes, once as feared a hitter as there was, but who, because of injury, has played exactly 46 big league games since 2017, at least he says it's injury, he says he will play this winter for Santiago of the Dominican League. I was once treated by a physician who said he was the one who gave Cespedes a cortisone shot just before the start of the 2015 World Series. I said, you missed. He said, no, I hit the inflammation in the shoulder right in the middle. I said, no, I meant you should have given it to him in the heart. That's what ails him. Still ahead, my career has featured an endless buffet of crazy bosses, but only one of them actually chased me around the studio threatening to kill me. And he got in trouble because of it. We will meet him next. First, the daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world. The bronze to the Los Angeles Times. I have marveled at them since I first moved there in 1985. It's a monopoly, yet you cannot rely on the paper's accuracy or whether it always lives up to journalistic standards. Yesterday, the LA Times produced a special memorial section about Los Angeles and sports legend Vin Scully. Its tweet promoting that section, quote, "Don't miss behind-the-scenes stories and photos dating back to his debut as the voice of the Dodgers in 1954. Vin Scully's debut as the Dodgers voice was in 1950, not 1954. Even if somebody was being subtle and was referring to Vin Scully's ascension to being the lead voice of the Dodgers, that took place in 1953, not 1954, when Red Barber refused the assignment to be the Dodger voice on the World Series and Scully took over. As of this recording, the Times still had not fixed the tweet. A runner-up, Senator Lindsey Graham, like the old Saturday Night Live sketch about a news conference about President Carter becoming gigantically tall because of exposure to radiation at the Three Mile Island nuclear accident. A reporter asks, is the president 100 feet tall? Spokesman played by Richard Benjamin answers with a laugh, no, absolutely not. Another reporter asks, is the president 90 feet tall? And the spokesman says, no comment. Asked about gay marriage, CNN on CNN, Graham flinched and then said, quote, I think states should decide the issue of marriage. The follow-up, should states also decide whether interracial marriage is legal? We're talking, he said, about things that are not happening because you don't want to talk about inflation.
Whatever it is they have on Graham, it would make the most amazing series Netflix has ever produced. I'm just saying here.
But our gold medal winner, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, in the middle of the all-day, all-night vote on the inflation climate change bill, he tweeted, quote, "The Democrats just blocked my effort to try and force Soros-backed prosecutors to put dangerous criminals in jail." Soros-backed, you say? I mentioned this last week. One of the easiest dog whistles in modern American fascism is phrases like Soros-backed or George Soros globalists. They mean only one thing in the world of Marco Rubio. Jewish people. Marco Rubio using pure dog whistle anti-Semitism. In Florida, that seems like an odd flex. Nevertheless, Marco Rubio, today's worst person in the world!
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
It's draft season. The 2024 NFL Draft is coming up, and the Move the Sticks podcast has you covered for all your draft needs. Do you want to watch the game like a fan or have the mind of a scout? The show's hosted by me, Daniel Jeremiah, and my partner, Bucky Brooks. The two of us bring knowledge from careers as NFL talent scouts to the podcast world so fans can watch and understand the nuances of the game like never before.
If you want to learn everything about this year's prospects ahead of the draft and learn what makes them stand out, there's no better podcast than Move the Sticks. Who are the top five draft prospects at each position? Which quarterbacks are going in the first round? Who are the top 50 prospects in the draft? Who should you put in your mock draft? We have all the answers for you.
We've been studying these prospects all season, so you won't get a better opinion. We'll have several new episodes dropping each week, and you don't want to miss a single one. Subscribe now and listen to the Move the Sticks podcast on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wow, the Chiefs did it. They went back to back.
The end of another season, and now for some time away from the studio.
Oh, Mark, we're not done. Now the fun starts. It's the off season.
The combine.
Guys running really fast. You bet we're covering
it. Free agency.
Old faces and new places. Of course we'll talk about it.
Got the draft.
The next generation of stars. It's a must.
I'll just set up a sleeping bag in the studio.
That's right. There's no better way to stay up to date on the latest from our league than listening to Around the NFL. We'll break down all the moves in free agency and make sure you're ready for the start of next season.
I'll be here, so you should listen to every word we say about everything we see.
That's right, Mark.
Listen to the Around the NFL podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Heed the call.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Finally, our number one story in the countdown, things I promised not to tell, and back to my favorite topic, me. How exactly was I supposed to tell the police that the man threatening to kill me was the president of MSNBC. He was chasing me through the studios. He was too overweight to run. But even though he inexplicably lied and said he was 6'7", at 6'5", this guy, his name was Rick Kaplan, and he was the soon-to-be ex-president of MSNBC, just as he was already the ex-president of CNN, he still had strides as long as my own. Plus, on that night of August 8th, 2005, I was multitasking. I was trying to mentally record everything he was shouting while also drawing him away from the live microphones of the live studio in which he had started shouting, while also fishing for my office key so I could lock myself in there if need be, while also figuring out how I would hit him if it came to that, while also trying to register the superb double takes from my colleagues past whom he was stomping like an out-of-shape Frankenstein, while also trying to suppress an overwhelming and seemingly inappropriate desire to burst into laughter, while still game-planning the soon-to-be-inevitable call to the cops of beautiful downtown Secaucus, New Jersey. He's trying to kill me, my boss, the president of MSNBC. The cable television network. Exact. Down the street from the London Fog Outlet store. Yep. One MSNBC Plaza. I know it's a dumb address. He's about 60, 275, 280 pounds. By the way, he says he's 6'7", but he's only 6'5". Why? Why does he lie about his height, or why is he trying to kill? Right. Well, I did a commentary urging the viewers to stop smoking, and he's afraid of the mention of blood. Hello? Hello? As all of this played out in my head, President Kaplan was huffing and puffing his way through our giant studio, weaving through the news assignment area, past the makeup room, down the hallways nearing the offices of my show Countdown, and past the bank of a couple of hundred television monitors with a different face on every one of them, each seemingly staring slack-jawed at the executive screaming threats at the only guy on his own network who got any ratings.
I'll pay you back. I'll get you. I'll finish you. I'll kill you.
This had all begun roughly 10 days earlier, in late July 2005. An oral surgeon who had intended to examine a growth on the roof of my mouth had instead, with one pale look, silently betrayed his suspicion that it was cancerous, and he cut the whole thing out. I was on my way to work anyway. It was too late to get a replacement, and I was bleeding so much that our technical director and I decided to pre-record all of my on-camera segments for that night's show, thus reducing the chances of viewers hearing me say, "President Bush today," while blood oozed out of my mouth, over my teeth and lips, and onto the desk, like I was Draculanker. When, the following Wednesday, I got the unexpected all clear from the surgeon's office, I decided to devote some of each night's newscast to a campaign to help viewers and myself quit smoking. My premise was a simple one that I had never heard argued before and have rarely heard argued since, that it would be a lot easier to quit if you didn't have cancer than if you did have cancer. I pitched my producers on the series. I went into Rick Kaplan's office to get his seal of approval. He was enthusiastic and supportive, and most rare of all, he was paying attention. And then I said I was also going to point out that if you got the good outcome like I had, they would merely stick a laser in your mouth and you'd smell your own flesh burning for like 48 hours, and you'd have to keep spitting out your own blood. Don't say that! He suddenly threw his meaty hands out towards me in a strangling gesture and then just as quickly clamped them over his own ears and closed his eyes and began actually screaming, "No, no, 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 no." I thought he had gone crazy. As it proved, he was just practicing for going crazy later. "I'm sorry, I'm squeamish. I get the point. I just can't handle references to, you know, the red stuff. Go ahead with the series. Just tone down the red stuff." I toned down the red stuff, and my executive producer, Izzy Povich, sent him the scripts, and he told her to tone down the red stuff a little more, and I went and I did that too. We all decided to start the anti-smoking series the following Monday,
August 8th, 2005. By nauseating coincidence, that was the day after the ABC anchorman Peter Jennings had died of lung cancer. The MSNBC president had been a producer on Jennings' newscast. I had long since written and recorded Jennings' obituary, and now the somewhat cold but still journalistically valid segue would have to be made. We would have to go directly from the 12-minute-long Jennings obit to the start of our anti-tobacco campaign. 8 or 9 minutes into that pre-recorded Jennings obituary, Rick Kaplan came out of his office and walked the 50 feet or so through the vast open newsroom to where my anchor desk was. His eyes were full of tears. "This is wonderful," he said quietly. "Peter would have liked this." He gave me a thumbs up. Then he walked to a second desk another 50 feet away where his first big hire, a woman named Rita Cosby, was about to premiere his first big gamble, her new show, immediately following mine. I was actually moved by Rick Kaplan's comment. I did not once think of phoning the Secaucus police. But then I began the anti-smoking segment, and as I focused on the camera and the teleprompter in front of me and detailed the blood and the gore and the spitting and how that was the good outcome, out of the corner of my eye, I saw this weird sight. The president again left his office and waddled out along the wall 30 feet ahead of me in the general direction of the control rooms. Within moments, as I continued to read my script, he was back in the studio and standing right next to my camera, gesticulating wildly. I said, "They never say it, but wouldn't it be really easier to quit smoking when you didn't have cancer than when you did?" And Kaplan responded with the same two-handed choking gesture he had made briefly in his office much earlier. I presumed there was some simple problem, like that the building was on fire, but I calculated that I could still make it to the show's scheduled finish time, 8:59:59 EDT, and still survive even if others perished. That's Countdown for this, the 830th day since the declaration of mission accomplished in Iraq. I'm Keith Olbermann. Good night and good luck.
"You son of a—"
Rick Kaplan suddenly screamed. From the other anchor desk, I could hear, and this is my impression of her,
"Good evening. I'm Rita Cosby. This is Rita Cosby live and direct with Rita Cosby, and I'm Rita Cosby."
She was not a big woman, but she had a voice on her like the horn on the Staten Island ferry if it had a cold.
"You are over the top. You are disgusting."
My first thought was that Kaplan had forgotten that microphones 50 feet away were live during the premiere of his pet project.
"Shh, Rita is on,"
I actually whispered to him. "Silly me.
I don't give a F if Rita is on. You were told by Izzy Povich that the piece was over the top and you needed to cut it, and you didn't."
I still couldn't bring myself to yell back, "We're in a live studio."
"I did cut it. And Izzy read it and approved it, and she said you had too. And Rita's premiere is going on over there in that sort of direction. Maybe you should yell at me closer to the assignment desk, maybe?"
"I don't give a crap. If Izzy approved it, then she's an ass. And I can't trust her. I can't trust you. You're all idiots. I can't believe you did this to me. I'm trying to get Rita's show off the ground, and you start talking about spitting blood into a garbage can."
Well, now I was getting angry. I couldn't resist.
"Yes, Rita is, in fact, live and direct from that desk right over there. And if you'll notice, she keeps looking over here at us, wondering why you are yelling during the first minutes of her first show. So why don't we move over here, Rick?"
I began to move away from him.
"And we're walking away from the live mics, and we're walking, and Rick and Keith are walking because the noise isn't really professional."
"Well, we're not talking professionals, are we? We're talking idiots."
We were walking, and he was still screaming.
"You're idiots! I will never trust you again!"
He had begun to trot, or stumble, or whatever he was doing.
"This is not over! I will pay you back, self-serving garbage! I will get you, and I'll get that a-hole Izzy for not staying here and reading that script! How many times did you intend to say spit blood into a garbage can before I stopped you?"
I now realized what he thought had happened, as he had gestured spasmodically at me while he stood next to my camera. I briefly let my focus shift to amazement at the fact that this guy who had been in TV news for 25 years knew almost nothing about how TV worked. I explained to him that Izzy and one of her assistants and I had gone over the script several times and taken out half of the gorier references.
"Then they suck at television! And since I can't trust anybody here, since they won't stand up to you and edit the script, since you obviously bullied them..."
He balled up his fist
and stomped his foot on the floor as he called me a bully.
I'm now going to have to approve every piece of your copy.
By this point, I was backing into the countdown work area with its array of desks and all the producers Kaplan had just insulted. I knew one of them would dial the phone when I said, call the cops and call this lunatic's boss.
Did you hear me? And if you don't like it and you don't want to come into work tomorrow, that's fine too.
I never did get that part. But now I had him. I crossed my arms in front of my chest slowly, like you have seen every news anchor do in every television news promo ever shown in the history of the world. I flashed as evil a slow-mo smile as I could. Oh, I'll be here tomorrow. And then I made a sweeping gesture back towards my staff, who were both, of course, literally and figuratively behind me. And so will all of them. Suddenly at that point, for no apparent reason, Rick Kaplan's hysterics were replaced by mere confusion. He even stopped huffing. At almost normal volume, he asked me, all of who? Only at this point did I turn around to discover that my entire staff had already left the building. There was nobody there behind me. Of course there was nobody there, Izipovich told me later. He went into the control room and threatened all of them first. So we got on the phone back to the office to tell everybody to get the hell out of the building. She paused and laughed. I mean, we love you, but we're not crazy. Rick Kaplan's exorcism was a brief one. He began screaming again.
I'm going to end your career tomorrow. I'm going to completely F you up.
He turned and stumbled away from my office.
Good luck sleeping tonight.
I slept like a stone. Not because Kaplan had previously threatened to fire me for not leaving my father's bedside after what they thought was a heart attack to fly to L.A. to appear on The Tonight Show, and not because he'd once threatened to fire me because he didn't like my tie, and not because he had previously threatened to fire me for not doing something during live coverage that I had already done but he thought we hadn't done because he was watching us not live but on delay on his DVR. President of a network. And I slept beautifully, not because I correctly guessed this would be it for Rick Kaplan, and it was. The next day, human resources forced him to apologize to me, and 10 months later, his bosses fired him. Nor did I snooze blessedly because of any bravery or stoicism or fatalism on my part, but I slept well simply because of the realization that even after all of this, Rick Kaplan was still only the second or third craziest MSNBC executive I had ever worked for. I've done all the damage I can do here. The countdown theme from Beethoven's Ninth, arranged, produced, and performed by Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chenail. All orchestration and keyboards by John Philip Chenail. Guitars, bass, drums, and drums by Brian Ray, produced by TKO Brothers. I think I got an instrument wrong there. The other Beethoven selections have been performed by No Horns Allowed. Our sports music, the Olbermann theme, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN, Inc., musical comments by Nancy Faust. Our announcer today, my dear friend of 30 years, Richard Lewis. Everything else is my fault. That's Countdown for this, the 579th day since Donald Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States of America. I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL Podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft.
That's right. We will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and surprises.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year.
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.